Let's do it. It's Baptism Sunday, so we are excited about that. So we're going to get right to work. We've been in the book of Jonah. We just started the book of Jonah. How we will bridge our text today to baptisms, I don't know yet. Jonah rebelled and they threw him in water, so we're going to do something similar to that this morning. We'll get there. And maybe if you were here last week, maybe you've already seen yourself in the first three verses of Jonah, where God calls Jonah on this mission that he's not too excited about, to go and stand in front of and resist and call people to repentance that maybe he's not too fond about, and it may not be safe in his mind. It might not be smart in his mind, and it's not his idea of a good time. So he runs, and that's kind of where we left off last week. And maybe we're not like physically on the run from God, but I think if we're honest, we put our comfort and our desires above the needs of others all the time. And we might not put it that way because that sounds terrible. Maybe we would say, well, I'm just busy. I would like to help, but I got a lot going on. I have my own problems, right? I have my own stuff to deal with. And we can be so consumed with our own situations that we don't care for others the way we want others to care for us. And our problems are real. And we got real issues. We got real stuff that we're dealing with. But how do our problems not make us indifferent to other people's problems, right? How do our problems not lead us to just be indifferent to other people's problems? How are we to not be consumed by our problems? How are our problems not to just dominate our focus all the time? How are our problems and our situations not to just completely rob all of our attention and all our energy away from the needs of others? Like, how do we break free from self-centered living? That's what we want to figure out. How do we break free from that kind of me first, self-centered living? And it's important for us to know, as we kind of work through this book, that Jonah is more of a mirror than a role model. As we see in him maybe what not to do, we also want to learn how not to do it. Like, how do we avoid behaving like he's behaving? And we want to understand, okay, this is kind of a picture of what not to do and how not to live, but how do we learn how not to do that, how not to make those same mistakes, even though we may see ourselves in Jonah. So let's take the next three verses and we see what we can learn. So Jonah chapter 1, we're going to pick up in verse 4. So if you weren't here last week, Jonah got this call to go to Nineveh and preach to them. He doesn't like that call, so he flees the opposite direction. He went down to Joppa. He got into a ship headed to Tarshish, and that's where we pick up verse 4. It says, "But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid." So this is a big storm. You got sea-seasoned people out there, and they are terrified. So you can imagine, this isn't kind of your normal rough seas. This is a big storm, and it's clear that the storm is from God. It says that he hurled it towards them. Literally, it's the picture is that God threw this storm at them. So this storm is from God. And one of the things that's clear here is that this teaches us is that if we are indifferent to others, then a caring God is going to be disruptive to you. Okay, if you are indifferent to others, then a caring God is going to be disruptive to you, because that's what he's up to. That's what he wants to do. He has compassion for the hurting. He has compassion for the lost. So if you don't, his plans for you are going to be very disruptive, and they're going to be different than your plans. And we see this already, that God is much more concerned about your faithfulness than your comfort. And he's much more concerned about your faithfulness than even your physical safety. He's not afraid to throw a storm at people for the sake of their faithfulness. So even right off the bat in this book, we have this tension that we see in trying to understand the character of God. On one hand, he shows such compassion for rebellious people like the Ninevites that he wants to go and address their wickedness to lead them to turn away from that. And then on the other hand, where you see a rebellious person and he is going, "I'm going to throw a storm at your face." So there's this tension. You kind of get this Aslan picture of God, of he's good, but he's not safe. And he throws this storm their direction. And notice what it does to the sailors. It says, "And each," these sailors, "cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. So this is their reaction to the sea. They're terrified, and they start chucking things overboard to try to make the ship lighter. They're trying to save themselves, and they also are what? They're praying. These guys are praying, each to his own God. They're polytheistic in their religion, and they're just like, let's just, everybody pray to your own God. We don't want to leave anybody out. But they're seeking, and they find themselves praying. And it's interesting how facing death can be such a motivator for prayer, right? I mean, even an atheist will pray in a foxhole. I mean, you get in that situation, and you find yourself praying. The ASU football team was on a flight back from playing the University of Washington State. And on the flight back, you have this charter plane, and you're about 60 miles from home. The plane gets struck by lightning. Like, boom, big crash. Like, you see the flash. All the lights in the plane go off, except the emergency lights. Now, come on. The things drop down, and you see the stewardess running down the aisle in tears, which doesn't help the situation, right? So in that moment, let me just tell you this. There were people, big, tough people, who don't normally pray, praying. I mean, it's interesting that how difficult times or hard times produce great opportunities to introduce God, because people are more interested. You have their attention. I mean, that's why, weddings, nobody cares what the pastor has to say. Like, let's just get through this. Isn't this a great day? But funerals, you got to have everybody's attention. I mean, it's hard times produce great opportunities to introduce God because people start looking harder. And wouldn't that be something if we saw hard times not just as hard times, but as great gospel opportunities? What kind of people would we be if in hard times when they come, we just kind of pause instead of just react, we just kind of pause and ask, okay, what kind of gospel opportunities is this presenting to me right now? What kind of unique opportunities in this situation do I have a chance now to make much of Jesus because all of a sudden I have people's undivided attention because of these circumstances? I mean, if we were just people that looked at hard situations as great gospel opportunities, these guys are scared for their life. Their ship's breaking apart. They don't know what they're going to do. But luckily for them, they have a prophet of God on their ship. So where's Jonah? Pick up. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. That's where our man is at. Like, he's, the storm's going on, and he went down and he's going asleep. And notice the contrast. So what's being painted is you have these pagan sailors who are praying, and you have a prophet of God who is sleeping. And this contrast is set up on purpose. And the author has kind of used intentional language all the way from the beginning of kind of showing us Jonah's demise or his wrong choices by this repeated word of down. Like, Jonah's going down. It went down to Joppa. It went down into the ship. And then he went down into the inner parts of the ship. And then he laid down to sleep. And pretty soon he's going to go down into the water. And then he's going to go down into the belly of the fish. Like, he is going the wrong direction. Like, Jonah is going down. Well, why? Why? My blood, well, he's making some bad decisions. Yes, okay, but what is behind his downfall and how do we avoid it? Let's keep reading. Verse 6. So the captain came and said to him, "What do you mean, you sleeper?" I imagine he might have said it differently than that, but he's like, how can you be sleeping right now? Are you kidding me? Like, what do you mean, you sleeper? How is it that you are sleeping during this? And the Septuagint is the ancient Greek translation of the Old Testament. It says that Jonah was down sleeping and he was snoring. So I don't think they added that. Just kind of rubbed, he's out. Like, he's a snoring away down there. And the point that's getting made to us, or that's getting made here, is he is sleeping through other people's crisis. You with me on that? Jonah, the prophet of God, he is sleeping through other people's crisis. Like, the wrath of God is upon them, and the prophet of God is sleeping. This is just shocking in this story. Like, the wrath of God is upon these people, and the prophet of God is sleeping. This is the same issue before. Like, God, in his compassion, wants to send Jonah to preach to the Ninevites, and he checked out. Now here, we have more lost people in need of help, and he's literally checked out. He's sleeping during this. And Jonah is indifferent to the needs of others around him. Jonah is indifferent to the needs of others around him. And listen, we live in the same broken world as Jonah. We serve the same caring God as Jonah. The question is, do we have the same problem as Jonah? There are storms going on in people's lives all around us. Are we sleeping through those? Are we indifferent to that? Do we drive right by them? Do we work in the cubicle right next to them? Do we interact with them every day? Are we just unaware of it? Do we just not care? I mean, this is, when we talk about the Involve Project, this is the notice. Like, are we noticing people? Are our eyes open? Are we just sleeping through their circumstances and their crisis, and we have answers to their problems, and we're just asleep? We're not aware of it. And some, it's like, I'm with you. Like, I feel like I'm terrible at this. We need to get better at it. I mean, my wife is like, she notices people. She points things out. I don't get it. I don't see it. Like, if one of our kids at dinner time says, I'm not hungry, you know, she'll be like, I think they're upset about something. I just think, you know, there's more food for me. They said they're not, they're bothered by something. They said they weren't hungry. If they were bothered by something, they should say, hey, I'm bothered by this. And that would be helpful. But we're just not aware of those things going on around us. And so often, listen, church, there are storms happening in people's life. And the question is, are we sleeping through them? And sleeping for Jonah here seems to be just kind of another attempt to escape. Like when life is bad, sometimes it's like, I just don't even want to get out of bed. I'm just going to pull the covers. I'm just going to kind of escape from this world. I don't want to deal with anything. So he's just kind of, this is another kind of expression of Jonah's desire to escape. And like the captain, the reader is also left wondering, how can you sleep during this? Like maybe physically, this isn't like a boat gently rocking you to sleep. There's a storm that's literally tearing the boat apart. Like, how are you sleeping? You have to want to escape this. How are you sleeping during this? Or for us, let's kind of bring this into our scenario. For us, how can we be indifferent? How could we be unaware? How can we be unresponsive to the crisis around us? And I don't mean that to be like, oh, shame on us if we're doing that. No, literally, that's a question. Like, how can we be unresponsive? What is the kind of behavior in us that's behind us acting like that? Chances are for most of us in here, we've heard of the Great Chicago Fire. October 8th, 1871, there's a small fire started in the south side of Chicago. You may know the barn. Maybe you're not aware of the Chicago Fire. It happened. It was a long time ago. It's a tragic thing. But O'Leary's barn, the story happened like that a cow kicked over a lantern, whether that's true or not, or somebody just blaming the cow. There was a fire that was devastating to the city of Chicago, probably killed around 250 people. It's a well-known event in history. And we all have heard of that, or maybe you have heard of that. Read a history book. We know of that, but chances are very few of us are familiar with the Great Pestugo Fire. The Great Pestugo Fire, which was a much bigger fire, probably killed around a couple thousand people, but we don't know about that. When we don't talk about that, when a lot of people don't know about that fire, and the reason is because it happened on the same night of the Great Chicago Fire, just 250 miles away. And it wasn't as high profile, and the news of the Chicago Fire just overshadowed that event. So we don't talk about that one. We don't know about that one. And for Jonah, yeah, their ship is getting torn apart by a storm, and the crew is scared for their lives, out of their mind. But all of that is getting overshadowed by the pity party he's throwing himself. Jonah's problems are much more high profile for him than other people's problems. And for us, the high focus we put on our own problems can lead us to miss the ones happening all around us. It's self-centeredness. Like, I'm just locked into my issues. I'm just overwhelmed by my junk. I'm just, you know, there's too much to deal with here. And we put our heads down and we're just consumed with our own situations. And listen, you can have all kinds of storms in your life and still not be self-centered. That is a symptom of a deeper problem. Self-centeredness is a storm of a different kind in our hearts that needs to be calmed. And that's the real issue here. I mean, look at this situation. Jonah, in case we forgot, is in the same boat as all the sailors. Like this storm that's tearing apart this ship, yeah, Jonah's in it too. Like he's kind of dealing with those same things, but Jonah doesn't seem to be too concerned about that. Because that's not the real problem. And we know that as the readers, because we kind of get this backstory that we kind of lead up to this and why he's at where he's at. But the sailors don't know that. He's just down there sleeping. The real problem for Jonah is not the storm. The storm is just a symptom of a bigger problem. The real problem for Jonah is that he is not being who he is called to be. He's not praying like he should. He's not seeking God like he should. He's not obeying like he should. And as a result, he's not being the person that other people need him to be. He is no good for anyone else because he is not right with God. That's the issue. Is that your issue? I mean, what if all your storms in life don't need to be calmed or solved for you to notice and care about others? Well, what if it's more about you being right with God in the midst of the storms so that you can be a help to others in their storms? I mean, what if it's just more about your own relationship with God? I mean, what did these sailors need from Jonah? Repent. Stop running from God. Be the prophet of God you are called to be. I mean, this is your take home. This is what I'd love you to remember. Be right with God to be helpful to others. Be right with God to be helpful to others. Like this is about our connection with God. Let's see if we can point this out. And I know other people's problems can be overwhelming. I mean, when you deal with somebody's junk and it's like, man, you got years of bad habits here and you want to sit down with a pastor and get fixed here in the next 45 minutes. I mean, it can be overwhelming and it can make you want to run from them. But I found what Jesus said in John 15 to be true. He says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Like when we look at other people's problems, like I have to do, like this is on me. I got to fix this. I got to solve this. It's overwhelming and it makes you want to run. But when Jesus goes on to say, but abide in me and bear much fruit. As in, if you stay close to me, I will deal with your fruitfulness. I will deal with your fruitfulness. Like if there's more in me, then there's more to be poured out on others. Like when I'm feeding and depending and growing in my relationship with God, then there's more to give out to others. Guys, our capacity to care for others is connected to our closeness with God. And maybe you feel like you just don't have enough to give. Let me say that again. Our capacity to care for others is connected to our closeness with God. That we abide and he bears fruit through us. And guys, hear me now. There are other people that need you close to God. You get that? There are other people that need you close to God. They need you to pray like you should be praying. They need you to seek God like you should be seeking God. They need you to obey like you should be obeying. They need you to be the person that you are called to be because they are looking to feed from the overflow of your life. And when you are not right with God, you are not of help to others. Jonah's running from who? Nineveh here? No. And the text tells us that Jonah is fleeing the presence of the Lord. He is running from his active relationship with God, and other people are suffering from it. He's running from this active, kind of abiding closeness with God, and other people are suffering for it. And the more we run from God, the deeper we get into the kind of this self-centered living, but the more we run to God, the more we're empowered and spurred on to care for others. Jonah's just running in the wrong direction. Jonah's heading in the wrong direction. He's going down. He's going down to Joppa. He's going down to the ship. He's going down into the ship. He's going down to sleep. He's just going the wrong direction. And notice the irony here. A pagan sailor has to wake up a sleeping prophet to ask him to pray. When we see clearly, he's not being the prophet he's supposed to be. A pagan sailor has to wake up a sleeping prophet to ask him to pray. Look at the rest of verse 6. He says, arise, call out to your God. This is what the captain says. So he finds him sleeping. He says, arise. We get that word again, like this call to action, like get up. Come on, Jonah. Let's go here. This is a call to action. He says, arise, call out to your God. And you got this pagan sailor waking up a prophet, asking him to pray. Like, do we need that? Would that be helpful? Like, if we brought people in from our community outside the church and just said, you know, if they said, come on, people, we're dying out here. Like, we're looking for answers, and we don't know. I mean, like, I'm praying to God, and I bought a lotto ticket, and, you know, I got a dream catcher hung in my car. Like, I don't know what, but I need help, right? Can you, like, if we brought people in here and just told us as church, like, crank it up, guys. Arise. We need you out here. We don't have the answers. We don't know what God is like, and we're perishing. Is that what we need? I mean, Jonah gets woken up by this guy, and he's in a crisis. And when the ship captain says, call out to your God, there is a rich history for an Israelite behind that phrase, your God. That's right. He is our God. Like, there's a relationship behind that language. When they were rescued out of slavery in Egypt, God said, you will be my people and I will be your God. And along with that, it's like, I will go before you. I will protect you. I will fight your battles. I will provide for you. I am your God. And there was this understanding from an Israelite that I am cared for, therefore I can care for. I am cared for. Look, listen, we break free from self-centered living through closeness to God. Not running away from him, but calling out to him, knowing his care for us, which frees us to care for others. Knowing his forgiveness for us that frees us to forgive others. Knowing his love for us that frees us to love others. Knowing that he has served us that frees us to serve others. Knowing he's secured our future, freeing up our present to be a sacrifice for his glory. We have to understand that. And maybe our lack of compassion towards others says something about our lack of relationship with God. There is a connection. And more importantly, or what makes this such a big issue, is our lack of compassion towards others also says something to others about our God. Look at the rest of verse 6. This is the sea captain talking. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. So these guys are polytheistic people. They don't want to leave anybody out. Everybody's praying to their own God. But Jonah's God seems to get special attention here when they put the article the before God. So yeah, we all have our gods, but we know of your God, of the God of Israel, that you claim that he's the only God. So maybe you're right. Maybe we're wrong. I don't know. I'm open to a lot of options right now because we're sinking, right? So we're trying everything out, but maybe you have the answers that we are looking for. And right now, because of my circumstances, Jonah, I'm willing to listen to what you have to say. Maybe the God. Maybe you're right. He is the God. And then Jonah, one of the things that we see, that we need to be reminded of, is outsiders don't really know what God is like. Outsiders don't really know what God is like. He says, perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Perhaps. And then if you jump over to chapter 3, when the Ninevites are seeking to repent, they say this, who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish. So it's like, perhaps he thinks of us. Perhaps he cares. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe he does, but I have no idea what this God is like, or if he thinks of us, or if he cares for us, or if he will rescue us. And who in this story knows what God is like? Jonah. You see in chapter 4, he says, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and relenting from disaster. Jonah knows what God is like. But other people are not getting a clear picture of the character of God from the prophet of God. When they look at the prophet of God, the conclusions that they would make about the care of God is, we're dying down here and you're sleeping. Is that what your God is like? Church, would our city know that God cares by the way that we care. May our city know that God cares by the way that we care, his people. Would we be a group of people that stop running to our comfort, stop running to what's easy, stop putting our issues first, and arise and act like the followers of Jesus were called to be? Or maybe you're more like the sailors in this story, and you're wondering, does God care? I mean, maybe, perhaps, who knows? It'd be nice if he did, because we're dying out here. Listen to me, this is good news. God does care. Yeah. God does care. God cares even when his people struggle to care. Thank God for that. Don't let the storms of life confuse you of that. And the irony here in this story is that they were wondering if God cares for them because of the storm. And the storm is God's care for them. I mean, this storm is thrown at them by God. And this storm is there to stop Jonah's rebellion because he cares. This storm leads to these sailors eventually calling out and making vows to the real God because he cares. So maybe it'll take a storm to get you to finally look up. But if and when that happens, this is what I want you to know. This is what I want you to remember. Our God has given thought to us so that we will not perish. Their question, that sea captain's question, perhaps your God give a thought to us so that we will not perish. The answer to that is yes, he has. Our God has given thought to us so that we will not perish. And we see that most clearly in Jesus. And because God cares, or that because he so loved the world, he gave his son, that whoever believes in him will not what? Will not perish, but have everlasting life. And he's not talking about just saving you from a storm, just saving you from a disease, just saving you from a crisis. He's talking about saving you for eternity, from damnation. And he would do that because he has given thought to you. He does care for you. And he has given us rescue from perishing.